This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you enjoy a longer, sweeter life. That's what it's all about. Here's our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Question for Zorba? That's the number to use. Zorba, along with the calls, some interesting research?
Yes, loneliness and high blood pressure. More information about social isolation and essentially how it may be deleterious for our heart and our blood vessels. And very interesting research on cloned piglets producing healthier pork. Healthier pork. Some very interesting data, really. Very
cloned piglets.
That's right. It really, in other words, pork might be healthy to eat. We'll talk about it. Some great information.
Okay. Any pork in our recipe?
No, not a shred of pork. It's grape lover's chicken. If you love grapes, if you like chicken, try this recipe.
Well, pork is the other chicken.
Yeah, the other white meat. Right. Give me a break, Tom.
800-462-7413. Zorba, listener with us now in Moore, Oklahoma.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I'm a runner. I'm a long-distance runner, and my question has to do with resting heart rate.
Okay.
I just recently went out and bought one of these gadgets, you know, heart monitor.
Good thing sometimes, because sometimes they kind of help people determine how much exercise they're really getting. Just like pedometers really help you. I think anything that spurs you to do more exercise makes a difference.
Well, the heart monitor measures your pulse rate or what? Is that
what you... And you strap on this little thing around your chest, and I'm glad I don't have it on right now because I'm nervous. It's probably going to the needle. I imagine most people calling in on the radio are that.
Oh, yeah, well, you should be because Zorba's pretty tough guy.
Terrible.
Pretty intimidating.
Crack that whip.
So, first question has to do with, is there really such a thing as a resting heart rate? Because you're supposed to put this thing on first thing in the morning, you know, before you have your coffee and all. And it sort of fluctuates. From, around 52 up to 60-something.
So, well, your heart rate fluctuates with what you're doing. Whether you're an athlete or not an athlete, if you're sitting down watching television or not doing anything that is mentally stressful, I think watching TV is pretty not mentally stressful, your heart rate is going to drop down to 52. If you get up and you go and you get coffee, for instance, you walk up and you get coffee, walking up, your heart rate's going to go up a little bit. If you are totally out of shape, your heart rate will go up more with minimal exercise. But yeah, no, it fluctuates over a 10 or a 20 beat cycle. It's rather interesting. If you have a lot of reserve, perfect example, you're an athlete and your resting pulse is in the 50s. Mm-hmm. If you get up and you walk around the house, your pulse is not going to go up that much. Maybe it'll go up 3 to 5 beats per minute. If you're totally out of shape, let's say on the other end of the spectrum, you're somebody who has heart failure and you've got emphysema, then your pulse might go up from a resting pulse. It might be at 70 or 75. You get up, go get a cup of coffee and go back. It can go up to 100. It can go up 25 or 30 beats because your heart is just, it's having trouble keeping up with its demand. So what's your resting pulse at?
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out. I mean, like I said, it goes down to 52, but it also is in the 60s a lot.
Yeah, well, 52 to 60s is pretty low. I mean, that's good low. That's not bad low. Yeah. That's good low. It's fascinating because you can't just look at the pulse. Some people have a low pulse because they have something called sick sinus syndrome, which means their heart is just not beating the way it should be beating. But if you're an athlete and your pulse is 50 to 60, it's great. Sounds like you're in great shape. What's it go up? How much do you run a week?
Pretty much every day except Friday because that's the day before a long run. So I rest up on that day.
Oh, a long run. So
how long is the long run?
Longer than most people would care to do. Like this last Saturday, I ran 15 miles.
Oh, my goodness. That is
a long run.
I would call that a long run. Do you do marathons or?
Yeah, sure. And half marathons are great because they're half the distance of a marathon, but they're twice as much fun, you know?
You don't get nearly as tired on a half marathon?
Right, because it's in that upper range, it's in that like 20-mile range that your body really starts flagging. Most people.
Well, do you win races a lot?
I never win, but everybody gets a medal. That's the great thing about marathons.
Everybody gets a medal. That's
everybody
right.
Everybody that finishes gets a medal.
It's like second grade.
So well, if you fly somewhere, like if I were to fly to Madison and run a marathon there, I'd get on the plane to come home, and the flight attendant would be like, "Did you win?" I'm like, "Sure," you know.
Yeah, right.
Because I have a medal on.
I got a medal on. I don't know. Did you win? Yes, I did. Absolutely. It's right. Well, it's your personal best.
That's winning.
That's winning. Absolutely. I love it.
The other part of my question is, like, I mean, you hit a plateau, right? I mean, obviously
right.
my resting
of
heart
course.
Rate is not going to go down anymore.
Of course. That's right.
Yeah, because I've been doing this 4 years now, yeah. so.
Yeah. How'd you get into it?
Through the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society.
Huh.
I raised
mm-hmm.
money for them, and they have a marathon training program, which
wow.
I call Team in Training.
Wow, a marathon training program. That's a great idea. Great idea.
Yeah.
Get yourself into a sport where you get your personal best, you get to fly in airplanes periodically, and most importantly, you get to wear a medal.
Yeah.
You get to wear a medal.
Thanks for the call.
Well, thank you.
Jim, bye-bye.
I have to tell you, it reminds me not only of second grade, but I was in Winchester, Kentucky, mm-hmm. giving a lecture. They had an opening of not exactly an arts center, but it was a performing arts center. And it was a wonderful opening, great people there. And I got a key from the mayor of the city, mm-hmm. which is really wonderful. So I have that key up there somewhere in my office, and people look at it and they say, wow, you got a key,
yeah,
in the city. They don't know where Winchester, Kentucky. It's a small little town,
yeah,
but it was
yeah.
a big thing to be in Winchester, to see the people in Winchester. They really liked it. I liked it.
Oh,
I
yeah,
really
well,
loved
nice.
The key to the city. And there's something about these talismen that you have, like a medal or a key to the city. It really has a lot of meaning.
Oh, no, it's very nice.
Yeah.
Now, we're talking about pulse rate. You know what kind of shape I'm in.
Right, right.
What would
know.
You guess my resting pulse rate would
72.
Be? It's 60.
Oh, my goodness. That means...
And while we were 60. Talking
yeah,
with the
right.
caller...
Yeah, you were taking your pulse?
I was taking my
yeah.
pulse.
What
and
was
guess
it?
During the stressful
yeah,
time...
Let me guess what it was.
You know, with yeah, all the
oh,
yeah,
the that tension and that adrenaline.
National
that's
radio
right. Moving out to the people.
Guess
right.
what my pulse rate is.
60.
Yes.
That's right. Well, that's
weird.
Well, that's because you're asleep half the time. There's nothing weird about it.
No one...
When
no,
you're not
no
talking, you're asleep.
I make all those mistakes and never get anything right.
That's exactly. You are asleep. Sorry.
I need to. Now, what's your resting pulse rate?
My resting pulse actually is around 60, 65.
Yeah.
My resting, but I work on it a bit. I do some exercise.
Yeah, you're
you work on it. Actually, you do exercise. You walk your dog.
I walk the dog. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. Time now, Zorba, for a question from our inbox. This one comes to us from an Oklahoma City, Oklahoma listener who happens to be the mother of an Air Force pilot.
Okay.
She writes, on a recent show, you stated that sunburn does not occur through glass.
Mm-hmm.
My son
mm-hmm.
says that when he flies at about 35,000 feet
mm-hmm.
across the pond, he notices a slight sunburn on the unprotected part of his face.
Uh-huh.
So is altitude a factor?
Well, altitude is a factor in radiation, but you can't... I do not believe
well,
you
so
can
you
get that.
He can. He does.
Well, he gets radiation. What happens is we know that there's an increase in skin cancers in Air Force pilots and in commercial pilots because when they're up, they're in a higher atmosphere and there's more radiation in that higher atmosphere. But I don't believe that you can't get a sunburn or a suntan.
Well, what
through...
is it that he notices the change
have,
in color in his
what?
Skin?
You know
if
what?
It is, it's sunburn.
You know something? I don't know what it is. It may be related to the altitude. And you know something? I've never read anything about altitude and sunburn through that. And I'm assuming that my information came from sea level because you can't get a sunburn through glass at sea level. The
maybe
do
things
not go
do
through
change.
At well, maybe they do. I don't have any idea. You know what?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Huh.
I don't know what that is when he comes up and he goes across the pond.
So maybe if we want sunburn or get a nice tan,
we should become an Air Force pilot. Now, she says unprotected part of his face. What does he wear with protection
well,
from
I suppose
part of his
you
face?
Have helmets
oh, you mean
stuff?
The helmets and yeah. the oxygen
yeah.
mask and
yeah.
all that,
yeah.
all the other things that are there. Well, that's kind of weird. Well, maybe the radiation that's up there. I don't know. You know what? Stump the doc time. I don't know. Now, there might be someone out there who really knows who might decide to send us a note on that. If they do it, they can do it at zorba@wpr.org, and they can send us that information and then tell us what it is. But frankly, I'm stumped. She stumped me.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Our next caller, Zorba, is in Gallatin, Tennessee. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
We have a son who is 30 years old and is a chef.
Okay, wow.
He's also mm-hmm. lactose intolerant, which mm-hmm. is a tough thing to be.
Tough thing to be when you're a chef.
Yeah.
Unless you work in a vegan restaurant. You'd be a chef
yeah,
at the
right.
vegan
no,
restaurant.
He works in one of those restaurants you can't afford to eat at.
Uh-huh.
Last year, he went to Tokyo for mm-hmm. a month to train at the restaurant, which they were going to bring essentially that same restaurant where he is right now in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
While he was in Tokyo, he had all kinds of cheeses. He had lattes. Mm-hmm. He had croissants with mm-hmm. butter in it. And mm-hmm. he had not one bit of trouble uh-huh. with all those milk and cheese products.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing he can think of is there they do not pasteurize.
Oh, I don't believe they don't pasteurize it. They pasteurize it. They have to. It's a public health issue.
Well,
he may not think they're pasteurizing it. They pasteurize it. It's public health. If not, they'd have listeria and other things that are done by milk. They pasteurize things. They have to. But that wouldn't make any difference for lactose intolerance anyway. But a lactose intolerance, for some people, ebbs and flows. In other words, you can have periods of time that you're not intolerant and periods of time that you are intolerant. Some people are lactose intolerant all the time. Some people are a little bit of the time.
Well,
and it's a function for some people of how much they
I wonder if there's a kind of a mind-body thing going on here, where
that's
there, if you're
point.
Really having
that's
a good
point.
Time,
really having a good
the
time
intolerance
in
will decrease.
There, now, that's very interesting. Maybe he doesn't have lactose intolerance. Maybe he has irritable bowel syndrome, which is more under mental control, and he wasn't stressed out in Japan. He's having a good time. He's training in Japan. He's surrounded by different foods. Sure. Tom, you bring up a great point. There may be a mind-body connection with his GI stuff. Forget the lactose intolerance for a minute. With his irritable bowel, his symptoms that he has. What kind of symptoms does he have when he has lactose intolerance back home?
He says his worst is when he has cream and coffee.
Mm-hmm. What does he have? What bothers him when he has
cream? He says as soon as within 3 to 4 minutes, mm-hmm. he has to go to the bathroom. He has gas. He usually have a small bowel movement. Uh-huh.
Well, maybe it may just, for instance, in the cream and the coffee is a good example of intolerance of coffee. A lot of people get their bowels going in the morning by having coffee. Mm-hmm. They have coffee. They have caffeine. It's hot water. But a little cream in the U.S. is a little bit of lactose that's in there compared to, we'll say, a chunk of cheese that he's eating in Japan. Mm-hmm. It's not the pasteurization. I cannot imagine that they drink raw milk in Japan because it's a big public health issue. That's how disease basically is spread. So I have to tell you, I'm a little bit incredulous with the idea that it's not pasteurized. But Tom brings up a great point. Maybe there's a mind-body issue.
Any recommendation for him?
Live in Japan.
Yeah.
That's it. Live in Japan. That's the recommendation.
And
live in Japan.
Don't work. Just have a good time.
Don't work. Live in Japan. Have a good time, and you won't be bloated. That'll be great. And if he can figure out how to do that in Japan, which is such a cheap country, let me know. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate the call. Another recommendation, keep listening. Your son will enjoy the recipe, which has soy milk.
Right.
That's coming up in a few minutes.
Right. That's
so
a good point.
Do stay tuned.
And soy milk is a very good point, especially for people who are lactose intolerant. Mm-hmm. I think soy gives you a lot of taste and avoids lactose. There's no lactose in soy milk.
Yeah. 800-462-7413. Oh, and speaking of mind-body stuff, Zorba, let's get to the topic you mentioned, loneliness and blood pressure.
Oh, yeah. Very, very interesting article, out of the University of Chicago. And it's quite interesting. They looked at older men and women, 50 to 68 years of age, and then they have markers for loneliness on questionnaires, psychological mm-hmm. questionnaires. Basically, do you have friends? You do things with other people. And what they found...
Wait a minute. 50 is older?
Well, according to the study, 50
these studies
is older.
Were done by 23-year-olds?
Yeah, these are done by 23 and 24-year-olds. That's right. That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Moving right along.
I always say that old age is 25 years older than you are today.
Right.
So when you're 25, 50 is definitely.
Okay.
Definitely old. And it was a 20-point questionnaire that they looked at. And if they didn't have any companionship, lo and behold, it appeared they had systolic blood pressure. That's the first number. If your pressure is 120 over 80, that 120 number is called your systolic. The systolic pressure was generally 30 points higher if you were lonely than if you weren't lonely. Now, that's a stunning difference.
That's dramatic.
Yeah, stunning difference. And I frankly don't know when they do larger studies, which they're going to do beyond this, if they're going to find that 30-point difference. But even if they find a 10 or 15-point difference, that's stunning. Now, what they have found in other studies in younger adults, so that's younger than 50, but these are adults in their 20s and 30s, was that younger adults who were lonely were linked with an increase in something called inflammatory molecules. And C-reactive protein, something we measure, mm-hmm. is an inflammatory molecule. And these inflammatory molecules, which are under psychological control to some extent, appear to be associated with an increased risk of high blood pressure and stroke.
Yeah.
And when you're lonely, you have more of these inflammatory molecules around. It's very, very interesting.
It's a happiness thing, isn't it? I mean, if you're
lonely,
you're probably not a very happy person.
You've got two sides. You have loneliness on one side. side, then you have neutrality in the middle and you have happiness on the other side. Most people are lonely, are not happy. That is absolutely true. Yeah. They're lonely. Lonely as a term.
Almost by definition, that means I'm missing
and
something.
And lonely means social relationships. Yeah. Now, for some people, the social relationship might be a person. Yeah. For some people, in all seriousness, it may be a dog or a cat. There have been studies that show that dogs and cats...
People don't feel lonely sometimes.
Right.
So
the issue is, though, another live human being, in some cases animals, that make a difference. And so for me as a physician, it's very important. We never ask people, are you lonely? What are your social relationships? I don't give people a 20-point questionnaire when I'm counseling them. I look at their cholesterol and their diabetes and so on. But if they have high blood pressure, I don't say go out and get a friend, go join a club, meet other people. And it's an issue as you get older because often your friends die off. You're not working at your job. Your family may move away. As one of the researchers says, as you go old, friends and family move away, you retire, fall ill, and die.
That's a terrible way to look at life.
That's a little dramatic. It's like, I thought, wow, do I have something to look forward to as I get older? Although by this study, I'm already there. That's a big problem.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in Oregon, Wisconsin, an area which you're quite familiar with.
Right.
Oregon, hi.
Town.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, what's up?
Two summers ago, I became golf-obsessed. Mm-hmm. And
you became golf-obsessed. It's a disease word. So, in other words, the G word kept on popping up in conversation the time, the G word.
But, yeah, and then I spent 1 week, and I did four rounds of 18 holes.
Oh, my goodness, that's a lot.
That's a lot
that's
of golf.
Golf-obsessed.
Yeah, I was
G-O,
kind of
golf-obsessed versus G-O versus GQ, okay.
And after that week, I developed this pain in my elbow, and I talked to someone about it, and they said, oh, it's probably golfer's elbow. You better stop golfing and get to a physical therapist.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in physical therapy then
until
December, and that was a period of July to December. I was in physical therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And we did lots of different treatments. I was there a lot. But it seemed like it was kind of temporary because the pain did come back, and they gave me all these exercises to do.
Did they give you the little splint, like the tennis elbow splint,
the
golfer's elbow splint?
Yep.
Did you see your trainer? Because golfer's elbows can also be the way you swing.
Yeah, I was taking golf lessons at the time.
Yeah, no, that's very important.
Okay.
So your swing was okay because it can be a swing issue also.
Well, what I was told by my physical therapist was probably that it was the combination that I'm at a computer all day and then golfing.
Oh, so you're at a computer all day, so you've got mouse elbow and golf elbow.
Yeah.
Mouse and golf elbow. Let me get it straight. You quit your job and became a professional golfer and your pain went away?
Maybe someday.
Someday. There we go. Someday.
But, and I did all these exercises that he recommended. Then I developed problems from doing the repetitive exercises. Yeah, like I've got this lump in my wrist that someone said was probably a cyst.
Mm-hmm. So you might have a ganglionic cyst or something.
Yeah, that's what they said
it was. So you've got a ganglion on your wrist, you've got mouse discomfort, and you've got a golfer's elbow. This
is
not good.
Good for my golf career,
this
is it?
This is not good. This is not looking good for your golf career. I'd recommend a different career. I'd pick up something like baseball, basketball. Might be good. The problem is it's overuse syndrome. That's what it is. So one thing you can do right away, use a mouse. Well, what I would do is go to a ball versus a mouse. You know, the track, you can get a track ball versus a mouse.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know what I do often? I have I work on a Macintosh.
Yes.
And so I have a Wacom tablet.
Mm-hmm.
So
what's
a
Wacom
tablet? With a stylus.
Oh, a tablet.
So that's, do you think that's a little bit better? Because it's so
well,
using,
that
like,
may
a
be
pen.
Better. I would look at the tablet with the stylus. I would look at the special keyboards that you can get that hold your hands in a different position.
They're
keyboards that split in the middle. They're really funny looking keyboards.
Yeah.
But once you get used to it, there are people who have that who, you know, really, really can make a difference on these keyboards. So I would look at that. So there are a number of things that I would look at to try to improve things.
Yeah. Is there a Golfers Anonymous?
Golfers Anonymous for people with a golf disease. That's right.
Maybe I should start one.
That's right. The G disease. The Golfers Anonymous.
Are you still golfing through all of this?
I haven't golfed in a while, but I am going to be golfing again soon. I'm
well,
joining
but,
a league
but these
soon.
Things can make a difference. You've got to, I would go back to the trainer. Very important, go back to the trainer and make sure and say, look, I've got golfer's elbow. Am I doing something wrong? Because that's
okay.
Part of it. I would go back to the trainer. I would change the keyboard. I would change the trackball, the mouse. And then I would go through, what do I want to do with golfing? And I would limit the amount and find out, is it the amount per week or the amount per day or the amount of one sitting? And then I would say, I would take an anti-inflammatory before I golfed and after I golfed on that day.
Okay.
That's what I would do. I would ice it and I would wear those splints and I would try some different splints like tennis elbow and golf elbow splints.
Okay.
I do all of it and then I'd see how much golf I can do. You may
okay.
be limited, but you're going to be able to play golf. You're going to be able to get back. Also, consider going to a sports medicine doctor besides the physical therapist if this doesn't work out better. Sometimes injections into the area with a bit of steroid can make a difference. And one other thing, there's a patch called the lidoderm patch. And this is a patch which has lidocaine in it. And for some people, they put it right over the spot that hurts them and the pain goes away.
Oh.
It's the lidoderm patch. It's a bit expensive, but you can cut out the patches and you put it on when you golf.
Oh.
And that may make a difference. So I want to give you some good tips on what to
Those
do. Don't give
tips,
up your
yeah.
game. Don't
okay.
give up your job. Try to make it work.
Well, I kind of have been considering maybe doing some acupuncture. Do you think that's helpful?
Sure.
Or?
Acupuncture, great idea. That
okay.
might also that might also help. It might change the channels, the chi channels, and that can make a difference in the energy channels according to the acupuncture theory, and that might
okay.
also work. So,
okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We have a chicken and grape recipe
yes,
coming
grape
up.
Yes, grape lovers chicken.
Sounds good to me, and that'll be along with more of your calls coming up here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again, 800-462-7413. Recipe time, Zorba.
Yes.
This one, grape
yes.
lover's chicken.
Grape lover's chicken. Doesn't that sound good? You love grapes, don't
I like,
you?
And, love yeah, is too yeah. strong a word. I like grapes. I like chicken.
Okay.
I love my wife.
That's right. There we go. There
yeah,
we go.
Okay.
Okay. Start out with 3 boneless, skinless chicken breasts halved, and you put salt and pepper on the chicken breasts.
3 boneless, skinless chicken breasts halved
right.
and
That's
S&P
right.
to
yeah.
taste.
And we're yeah. making this in, if you will, sort of a very, it's a limited recipe in terms of 200 calories for half a chicken breast. If you want a whole one, it's going to be a 400
well,
calorie
are we
breast.
Serving 3? That's an unusual number.
Yeah, 3 is an unusual number, so I cut them in half and we're serving 6
oh.
as a side dish.
Okay.
But if you want it as a main dish, it's 3. Yeah, it's a couple and the neighbor next door.
Okay, all right.
it's the neighbor next door. Now, about the salt and pepper to taste. If you want it to taste good, you never use pre-ground pepper. And frankly, the best salt to use is either sea salt or kosher salt.
What do you mean
salt.
You never? Oh, you mean you always grind your own pepper?
Always grind your own pepper. It's much better to grind your own pepper.
Oh,
there's no comparison
yeah.
in what it tastes. You can even buy, you know, throwaway pepper grinders now at the store. But the same is true of salt. It's better to use salt on something like this, which is either kosher salt that has a bigger kernel of salt. It's really not a kernel,
yeah.
but
yeah.
The salt is not as refined. Or to use sea salt. It really does make a difference.
Yeah, I shouldn't grind pepper because I love pepper, and you don't get enough taste out of the regular.
You don't have a pepper grinder?
No, I don't have a pepper grinder.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Oh, you should have a pepper grinder. You can buy them for $2
Why
now
would
in
I
the
do
store.
That? Because I never
That's
eat
right.
at home.
Yes, that's right. Never eat at home. That's right. That's right. Well, get thee a pepper grinder.
Yeah, okay. Take it to the restaurant with me.
That's it. You take it to the restaurant.
Okay.
One half teaspoon of nutmeg.
A half a little tea nutmeg.
Again, never ground nutmeg. Grind it yourself. And what you do is you buy the nutmegs. They're nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is you have a little nutmeg grinder.
There is a nutmeg grinder?
Well, no. You take it off of the things that you use to grind things, the little kitchen gadget that has 4 or 5 different holes to grind. obviously it's falling on deaf ears.
You're trying to explain
you can use it's just like trying to explain
well
it to an alien. alien. No. Martian.
Okay.
But you use something like you would use to essentially grind Romano cheese. You can use a grinder that you use to zest. You can use a zester, but it really tastes much better. Pre-ground nutmeg doesn't taste as good because the smell goes away. The aliphatic hydrocarbons.
I get it.
A tablespoonful of olive oil.
Big tea olive oil.
Extra virgin. 1 tablespoon of grape jam.
Big tea grape jam.
Extra virgin.
Extra virgin grape jam.
Just want to make sure that you're alive.
I'm paying attention. Yeah.
That's right. Teaspoon of tarragon.
Little tea tarragon.
4 green onions chopped.
4 chopped green onions.
3/4 of a cup of white wine.
3/4 of a cup of white wine.
Yeah. Now, what do you use when you cook with white wine?
What do you mean, what do I use? What kind of wine?
Yeah, it's an alien. I'm just asking you. What you should use is vermouth. Vermouth is great.
Oh, you've mentioned
inexpensive,
that before, yeah.
Has a screw-top bottle if you buy the cheap kind. The cheap kind works just as well. Stays very well.
Yeah,
use that for your white wine.
Vermouth doesn't taste like a good white wine.
No, you don't need a good white wine. You don't need a good white wine.
Easy for you to say.
That's right. Yeah, not so much. Vermouth is great to use in any white wine cooking. One cup of seedless green grapes.
A cup of seedless green grapes.
Can you buy green grapes with seeds? I've never seen them. You can buy purple grapes with seeds.
Yeah, I don't think there are seeded green grapes.
No. And 1/4 cup of soy milk.
1/4 cup. Why soy rather than 1%?
Because it'll have soy milk will have less fat, and you could use 1/4 cup of whole milk if you wanted to. But soy milk has a nice, interesting taste because I wanted to make it a little bit healthier. You've got soy, you've got the phytoestrogens from soy, and that makes it healthier. Mm-hmm. So sprinkle the chicken with that good kosher salt and pepper and nutmeg. Once again, all sort of lively done, nothing out of a pre-made, pre-ground jar. Then in a large skillet, heat oil, brown the chicken breasts on both sides. Then add the jam, tarragon, green onions, and wine. Cover and simmer for about 15 minutes till the breast is cooked in the middle. One way is to use a microwave thermometer. Make sure it's 185 degrees. You can also look in the middle and make sure there is no pink. There should be no pink at all.
Mm-hmm.
Then add the grapes and cook for another 5 minutes max. Remove the chicken and grapes with a slotted spoon to keep it warm. Then add the soy milk to the pan, turn the heat up, and reduce it uncovered until it thickens a bit. Spoon it over the chicken and over the grapes and serve it. And it's really very, very good.
It sounds very good to me. I like the little touch of the tablespoon of grape jam, which would kind of enhance, obviously, the grape taste.
It makes it sweet. It'll enhance the grape taste that you get from the
seedless grapes.
And I think
that'd be a nice combination, the chicken and the grape.
It really is good. Now, we initially looked at the recipe, and it had 1/4 cup of whole milk, or cream, rather, 1/4 cup of cream. As you know, cream is a high-fat item. Cream has a lot. It added more calories, basically, from saturated fat. It had 5 grams of fat. Most of that was saturated fat. And what we did was substitute soy milk instead, using 1/4 cup of soy milk. It's much healthier, and we cut the saturated fat, that's all, the saturated fat in there, basically, from 1.9 grams to less than a gram of saturated fat. And the whole idea is to try to... whenever you can get rid of saturated fat, it's significant.
But, you could do the same thing with skim milk if you wanted.
No, skim milk would not give you the taste. You need something that's a little
1%
bit thicker.
1%. With 1%.
Well, you might have to use whole milk. You might have to use it. 1% might do something with it. Skim milk wouldn't do it. Skim milk, you've got to have a little bit of fat.
So soy would give
you
the
taste. And soy milk
has
a little bit of fat, but it's not as much saturated fat because it's a vegetable product versus an animal product.
You know, I gripe about tofu all the time. I'm not that opposed to soy milk. I don't drink it very much, but I'm glad you're not opposed to it.
And how do you like it? Do you like
it? It's not bad.
It's not bad. Not bad is good for you. Not bad is good for you. That's as good as it gets. Not bad.
And this recipe is
good. Life isn't that bad? Yeah, soy milk isn't that bad. Yeah, that's as good as it gets for you. I'm just trying that out.
Let us send you this recipe. Address your request to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, our zip code 53706. Be sure to enclose a business-size self-addressed stamped envelope. We'll be happy to send the recipe to you.
Or, if you're not a Luddite, you can go to ZorbaPastor.org and print it out. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
What's that address again? I want to run to my computer if I can find one.
If you're not a Luddite.
What is that again? What is that web address?
ZorbaPastor.org. 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 Enough of the website. Enough.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, as you'll recall. 1-800-462-7413. Zorba loves to hear from you. A listener with us now, Zorba, in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hello, Zorba and Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you so much for calling. How can we help you?
I have a question about the prescription drug Topamax.
Uh-huh.
About 6 months ago,
Topamax,
I never heard of Topamax.
Topamax is a drug that's used for epilepsy.
Uh-huh.
It's used also to prevent migraine headaches. Some people use it for pain relief also, but it's called an AED, an anti-epileptic drug. That's what it is.
Right, and I used it for oral neuropathy.
Mm-hmm. Oral neuropathy, what kind of symptoms did you have? I mean, neuropathy is a big fancy word that people don't know, and it can be pain or numbness. What did you have?
Two things. I had a lingual nerve injury 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So you had how'd you get an injury to your lingual nerve in your mouth?
My dentist.
Oh, uh-huh.
And that progressed. Mm-hmm. To burning mouth syndrome.
Oh, that's unusual. That's an unusual thing to
get. Mm-hmm. And then I had quite a bit of dental work done to adjust a TMJ problem.
Okay.
And I now have a constant burning on the upper left of my mouth.
Okay.
So I went to a pain management center.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And they put me on Topamax. This was about 6 months ago for a 6 week period.
Okay.
And the drug has some side effects, which include loss of appetite,
right,
weight loss.
Right.
If you don't drink enough water, you have tingling, vibrating fingertips.
Right, for some people. And some people call it Dopamax.
Yes,
because
they do.
It make you
I wasn't going to say that, but
Dopamax,
they do.
Because it makes you dopey.
Right.
But all the drugs in that class can make you a little bit dopey.
That's right. So 6 months later, I'm still 14 pounds under the weight.
Good.
But I didn't need to lose weight.
Yeah.
That's
oh, I'm sorry. You didn't need to lose weight. So you're not one of the 70% in the society that want to lose weight.
Well, I actually tried to lose 5 pounds for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And couldn't do it.
5 pounds for 10
years.
And that was how much I thought I was overweight.
Okay, yeah. 5 pounds
and
for 10 years.
So I'm still 14 pounds under my weight 6 months later. I still have a loss of appetite.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's not good.
And
what,
it's as if my metabolism has been changed back to what I experienced.
Yeah. Are you still on the Topamax?
No, I was only on it for 6 weeks.
Oh. Uh-huh. Well, 5% of the population wants to gain weight. That's what it is. You're in the 5%. That's what it is. And you lost the weight on it. And you don't have much of an appetite. And the answer is start eating junk food. You know, have your Snickers in the morning, get a milkshake in the afternoon, and then have put a lot of butter on your bread.
This isn't Zorba Pastor on your health thing.
That's the way to do it. But it's ultimately calories. That's what happens. And you're eating less calories.
But you have to force food.
Force food. Yeah, we're going to have to force feed you. We'll just put it down into your throat like a goose.
Well, part of my problem is I'm allergic to soybeans.
Mm-hmm.
And that is in so many different products.
Well, it's in prepackaged products.
Yes,
it's not in products that you make yourself.
Right.
It's in prepackaged products.
I didn't know. So
but wait a minute. But go back a second. I mean, you lost these 14 pounds. You just have to go back to your old eating habits. Now, that's not easy. But, you know, 2 years ago, you were eating the number of calories
she still doesn't have an appetite is the problem.
Well, that's the problem. Well, that's – well, you know what? There are a lot of people who are sitting listening to the show right now saying things like, I'll give you my appetite.
Yeah, right.
You know, which of course is a dumb, stupid thought, but we say it.
You call this a problem?
You call this a problem. I have a problem. I can't stop eating. You know, 70% of the people listening to the show are saying exactly the opposite. I want what she has. But the reality is it affects 3 to 5% of the population, and it's just as much a problem for people underweight with no appetite as for people who are overweight who have an appetite. It is a problem.
Well, I know many of your listeners might think this is like getting the genie to grant one of the three wishes.
Yeah,
but it's your problem. And the problem is you have to try to get more calories, and you have to look at the calories that you're eating and see what you can add. And if you add 150 to 200 calories a day to your diet, you'll do that. And frankly, in all seriousness, a candy bar is about 220 calories. It's not good food to add, but that is one way of adding. Whole milk is another way. A milkshake that's fortified is another way. Protein, such as two eggs during the day, will also make a difference. That's about 250 calories. Butter on bread, a pat of butter is 100.
I can do that.
Butter on bread, pat of butter is 100 calories. So, you know, if you like toast, make make toast or bread and put butter on it and put jam on it, and you'll get more calories. That's what you do. Or you go get something like Boost or Ensure and drink that, although I wouldn't drink that electively. But that's what people drink if they're old, if they're over 50 and they're old and they want to put on weight. Yeah, those old folks over 50.
Those geezers.
Those geezers. They sit down and they don't go out for a drink at night. They go out for some Boost or Ensure, and that's what they drink.
Well, have you heard that it can permanently change your metabolism?
No, it doesn't. It actually does not permanently change it at all. Because people who stop taking it, who take it to lose weight, gain the weight back when they stop.
This is
taking
just
it.
A habit thing, and she needs to change her.
It's changed your habit.
I need to readjust my eating
habits.
Right,
because people do. What happens is they do go back to eating the right amount of food that they need to eat. So.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you so much for your help.
Appreciate the call.
Pleasure.
Yep. Bye bye.
Take care.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. To El Paso, Texas, we go now. Hi.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're fine. What's up?
Well, I had a question for you. About a year ago, I was squatting down. I was working outside, assembling some dressers. When I got up, my right knee was hurting.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, okay, you know, I was working on my knee, so that's why I was working. So anyway, I iced it down. There was swelling initially,
mm-hmm.
but after I iced it down, the swelling went down, and the pain did reduce, but the pain continued. You know, I wasn't able to do anything about it. So I went to the doctor, put a brace on it. I had an MRI done, and basically the doctor says there's nothing wrong with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, the doctor looked at the MRI and didn't see anything on the MRI, which looks inside the joint, looks at the soft tissue, and nothing showed up. There's something wrong with you if you still have pain.
Right.
I still have pain.
Mm-hmm. There may be nothing in the meniscus that shows on the MRI. There may not be a torn ligament in the MRI. There may not be something that's happening in the bone in the MRI, have pain.
Would a pinched nerve show?
Yeah, you could have a bursitis in there. You can have something called a pes ansine bursitis, which is a bursitis. The bursa has a little fat pad that is sort of around the knee. You can have a prepatellar bursitis and a fat pad, which is another fat pad. You could have some inflammation in the joint. There's something wrong if you still have pain.
Well, basically, the rest of the symptoms of this is that my knee by itself is not what hurts. It's when I'm sitting down at my desk
mm-hmm.
and I go to get up,
mm-hmm.
my leg falls asleep. And it feels like that tingling when your foot falls asleep,
sure,
but it's only
sure.
at my knee.
Uh-huh. So it occurs at your knee. Have you talked about this to your doctor?
I did. I talked to him about that, and he said, well, maybe it is a pinched nerve, and he gave me some anti-inflammatory medicine. Mm-hmm. And
So your main symptom is when you're going from a sitting to a standing position?
For the most part.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you sit on a hard chair. Have you tried putting a cushion under where you're sitting?
I've tried everything. Different chairs affect me differently.
Oh, okay, because it sounds to me like this is a pressure on the nerve. You could have a pressure on your sciatic nerve. The sciatic nerve starts in the back of the buttocks and goes down the knee, and this sounds like this might be sciatica. I don't think this is related to the knee.
Right.
It sounds like this is a variation of sciatica. It's from the way you're sitting. And what you've got to do is try different cushions, including cushions that are called donuts. They look like a donut, and they're made of this hard gel, and they allow people to sit in different ways so they don't push on their sciatic nerve. That's what you have to do. Have you gone to a physical therapist yet?
No.
You need a physical therapist or an occupational therapist to look at what you're doing and how you're sitting. OT is probably the way to go, occupational therapy, or somebody of that nature, because I think it's related to your chair, it's related to sitting, and it's related to pressure probably on the sciatic nerve. I don't think it's due to the ligaments in your knee. I would agree with your doctor. This isn't in your knee. It's a nerve you're pinching, and you're doing it when you're sitting. It's pressure. So that's what I would do. You got to go and find out what it is that you're doing wrong. You have to bird dog it and figure out what it is. And you've already noticed different chairs do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to figure out now what it is or the way you're sitting in which chair that's putting this on. So.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Appreciate the call. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. We have some fascinating research coming up and more of your calls, too. Stick around here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, 800-462-7413 if you'd like to talk with Zorba. But before our next call, Zorba, they're cloning pigs to produce healthier pork.
That's right.
Now.
They're cloning. They have pigs that they have cloned. They actually, what they did was they produced a genetic material from a roundworm, put it in a pig cell, and the pigs are now producing omega-3 fatty acids, which are just the same fatty acids that you find in salmon and oily fish. Soon they'll be able to advertise pork. The other white fish.
So,
although salmon isn't white, so, obviously it's salmon colored.
Pork and salmon, essentially, just the same.
Weird? It would be strange. But what they're doing, we have to look at healthier foods and can you make healthier foods? And it's a big issue when we do genetic engineering. It's a giant issue. But what they did was they were able to make a piglet that essentially produced omega-3 fatty acids, not just the linoleic acid and other fats
and
that
are
not
good for us. That's good for us.
Right. Omega-3 fatty acid is good for us. And the idea would be to make a pork that would actually be healthy for us. And these are big issues. We make foods that are healthier for us. They may be lower in fat. They may have more fiber in them. But the FDA has some big issues with it, because if you make an animal product that is supposedly healthier, it has to jump through a lot of hoops. There's one company that essentially tried to produce a genetically engineered salmon that grew quicker, and the FDA has been looking at it for 9 years and still hasn't ruled on whether or not they're going to allow it to be produced.
Yeah, I'd be a little cautious, I think.
My thought is this. Caution is one thing, and I think being cautious, does it do any harm? If the answer is no, it doesn't do any harm, and they can't show it doesn't do any harm, then I think it's a labeling issue. And then you have a choice. You could say, I would like to purchase the pork that's genetically engineered if the FDA allows it, or the one that is not genetically engineered. It's obviously going to cost more. But I think as a consumer, you've got that right. I mean, you can buy alcohol, you can buy cigarettes, you can buy a lot of bad food, you can buy chips and dip that are really not healthy for you, and the FDA doesn't say you can't buy it. Yeah. I, as a consumer, ought to be able to buy piglets that have omega-3 fatty acids in them.
This stuff is not on the market.
Oh, no. We are so far away from the market. You know, if it happens in our lifetime, I'll be kind of amazed.
This little piggy may never go to market.
This little piggy may never go to market. That's very good. This little piggy may never go to market. But the whole idea is that if we can produce better animal products that are healthier because we like the taste of it, that's an okay thing to do, as long as it's labeled correctly. And to me, that's the
issue. I'm kind of looking forward to this.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't eat much fish. We, you know, in America, we don't eat much fish. We should be eating 2 servings of fish a week. We know that's healthier for us, and maybe soon, maybe a long time from now, we may be able to eat pork that's just as good as salmon for our heart.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. That's 1-800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba in Oakland, Oregon. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Well, I recently bought a new Prius and drove it for a couple of days and got migraines and nausea every time I was driving it.
You got migraines and driving a Prius, the car?
Well, as near as I can figure out, it's all of the chemicals in that new car smell.
Mm-hmm. Well, it could be the new car smell. The new car smell. Leave the windows open.
Well,
it's hard to do when you're raining in Oregon. Leave the windows open. Put on your rain jacket, leave the windows open, and drive through. That doesn't really work. It may work in Phoenix, but it doesn't work in Oregon. And keep them. Of course, Phoenix is pretty hot, but Oregon is pretty wet. So what are you doing about it?
I'm selling the Prius.
Oh, really?
Oh, this
is really serious.
Yeah.
You don't think it would go away if you kept it for a couple more months or so?
Well, I got online, and what they say on there is it takes about 6 months for that, the outgassing of the chemicals, the glues and everything in there to kind of dissipate and go away. And
that's interesting.
I don't have 6 months to
live. You don't have 6 months to live with this. have you had tried this with other cars? Have you had problems with other automobiles?
You know, I haven't had a lot of new cars to really test it out on.
Here's an idea. Before you sell it, try smoking in the car.
try smoking in the car.
That would get rid of the new car smell.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't be able to sell the car. It's a Prius.
Well, and I'm allergic to cigarettes.
Prius. Give me a break. She'd have to get get a truck. Smoking in Prius does not work in the same breath, Tom.
Oh, never mind.
So, well, then you have to do that. That's the answer. You know, you're right. It's like a new office building. There are problems that some people have with new office buildings because of carpeting and smells and glues and everything else. And the answer is yes, you have to sell
your Prius. That's tough because you take a big hit when you sell a new car.
Well, yeah, maybe. Maybe Prius is hard to get. So have you put your car up for sale? Any buyers yet?
Well, no, I haven't had any buyers. The government is offering some wonderful tax incentives and stuff.
You mean you can sell the tax incentives?
No.
Oh.
The tax incentive is only on new cars, and this will technically be a used car.
Oh, I see. But did you get the tax incentive when you bought the car?
The federal tax incentive, you have to own the car for a year.
Oh my goodness!
So I'm kind of stuck there.
Oh, you are definitely stuck. So, well, what a shame. Well, sorry to hear that. So what are you going to buy? Like an old Volkswagen?
that's sounding really good right about now.
But clearly, what did you drive before this?
Yeah,
I actually have an older Saturn, and before that, I did have a Volvo.
Mm-hmm. Did you have headaches when you had that Volvo? Well, I would clearly not buy a new car again.
I'm going to steer away from them.
You have to buy used cars if you have headaches like this. Sorry. They're chemicals. They're producing migraine headaches, and you got to switch cars.
I've never heard of that before.
Toyota is, according to what I found on the Internet, is looking at producing their new cars with some clean air standards so that when you buy a new car, you aren't getting a car with all of those chemicals.
Uh-huh. Well, they may actually, they use all these glues and other things. I would think they could engineer that out. Well, good luck. You've got to get a used car to make sure it doesn't.
Do other smells give you headaches, too?
I've always been bothered by cigarette smoke, perfumes, stuff like that. Yeah. But that's stuff you can easily avoid.
Well, not necessarily. I read an article the other day about a principal in a school, superintendent in a school district, who's banned aftershave lotion and cologne in the school because there was a doubling or tripling of migraine headaches among the students and the teachers. Because now everyone puts on perfumes and aftershave. The guys and the girls at school, boys and the girls go all do it. And so they've stopped using it, and it's dropped the migraine headache rate in the school. So these chemicals and these smells really have a lot of meaning to some people. So good luck to you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. 800-462-7413. Zorba, we welcome a listener now in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
We're good.
How can we help you?
My question was, I've been working out, like lifting weights, and of course the cardio in there for the health, for the heart health. And I was wondering about squats in particular. Mm-hmm. And how damaging they are to the joints, to like the knee joints, and if they cause arthritis, or am I going to have increased risk of developing arthritis earlier?
Sure. Good question.
Something like
good
that.
Question.
Yeah.
The issue with squats has to go with how far down you go. So when you do your squats, do you go all the way down or you do a half squat?
I'll usually go just parallel to the floor, where your thighs are parallel to the floor.
And that is very different from going all the way down. It's that a full squat appears to be more likely to cause damage. And the damage really has to do with the ligaments that are in the knee. It's not necessarily damage of arthritis later on. I don't think there's been any study that shows that squats actually produce arthritis. But they can produce ligamentous injury once you go beyond that parallel to the floor place. And that's more or less where this comes by. Because up to there, you're really doing a lot of exercise for your thighs.
Let me ask the caller. I don't, as anyone who's ever seen me knows, I don't do weights.
You don't? God, I never knew that, Tom.
Let me ask you, is there not another kind of exercise you could do that would give you the same muscle effect as the squats that you're doing? Couldn't you do it a different way where you didn't have to squat?
You could. There's leg extensions, which it's like you're sitting down and you're extending your leg in front of you. But I've even heard things about that being kind of worse than doing squats, maybe. You can do another thing, hack squats, which is kind of on an incline, which I don't know if that would be less stress. And then they have machines, too, you can do that they're a lot less impact, where it's not really free weight, but it's kind of on a like a lever.
Oh, yeah, there are the machines. Sorry, the machines are on levers.
Wouldn't it be better to go to one of those?
I started experimenting using that, but you don't. you don't really get the better workout with that.
Right, right.
Enough for the muscles. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Well, as long as the real issue is how far you bend your knee. And if you're staying parallel to the floor, you're not bending your knee as much, and that's what the issue is. The half squat, the full squat of going all the way down, appears to be the one that's a bit more damaging over time to the ligaments of the knee as you get older. You know, they don't bother you when you're, you know, when you're 16, from 16 to 26, they're not going to bother you. The issue is, what about when you're 36, 46,
when you're really old.
Yeah, when you're
like
really
50.
Old, like 50, and you're really old, and you can barely even use your brain to remember
what
a squat is like.
Decrepit.
That's right, decrepit. You can barely even breathe at 50. So keep up the good work. It's really important exercise. Lifetime exercise, big issue. Weights are important, like you say, cardio for your heart, balance, something like that. Weights, they all really count in a healthy body.
Yeah, good luck, and thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you very much, guys.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Zorba, not too long ago, we were talking about cinnamon and cholesterol. You'll remember?
Yes, we were.
We were wondering if cinnamon comes from a tree. That's how
yes,
smart
that's right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
I didn't have the answer. Was it a bark?
Well,
right.
in no time, yeah. Our inbox
no time
was stuffed
full.
With definitions, stuffed. Corrections, nice. And nice other assorted
see,
claims.
Nice to see people are listening.
Claims to the mystic yeah. power of cinnamon.
Yes, cinnamon.
My
cinnamon.
Favorite from the inbox was the claim described by Will in Utah that cinnamon can not only lower your cholesterol, but can wither your glutamus maximus.
Wither your glutamus maximus.
A condition known as cinnamon buns.
Oh, God. Oh, that's awful.
Anyway,
gosh.
Here comes Mike from Boise, Idaho, yeah. who helps us set the record straight. Cinnamon is indeed from the bark of a tree.
Mm-hmm.
The most commonly used cinnamon comes from the cassia tree. But it can also come from the Ceylon tree.
Oh, huh.
You know about the cassia
yeah, of course,
tree
yeah.
and the Ceylon
yeah, of course,
tree.
Of course. I wonder, does the whole forest smell of cinnamon? When those forests of those trees, do you smell like cinnamon? And it just smells like walking through buns, those cinnamon buns.
I don't know if it needs to be kind of ground up to get the smell.
It must have something to it, don't
that'd
you
be an interesting forest.
Interesting. Yeah. It smells good to me. Yep.
The ground cinnamon we used is from the crushed bark.
Got it.
Bark or no bark, cinnamon on French toast is really, really good.
Really good.
We thank all of you who wrote in, even the glutamus maximus cinnamon buns guy. And if you want to send us a comment, tip, or stump the doc question, just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Zorba, thank you very much.
A pleasure, Tom.
For a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web at
ZorbaPastor.org.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Joe Hartke is our sound engineer. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark. Hoping you're with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For a copy of today's show, call the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0310Z. To buy Zorba's book, The Longevity Code, your personal prescription for a longer, sweeter life, or to pick up a copy of Zorba's Heart Healthy Cookbook, just go to our website at zorbapastor.org.